Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another edition of Mindshift Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Clint Haycock, coming to you from, once again, The Rock here in North Wales. I've been doing a lot of traveling around the world, and in fact, as I mentioned last week, we have embarked on an international tour of guests on this show. Last week, we started off in Canada with our guest, David Hayward, the Naked Pastor, and today's episode is part two that's going to finish our conversation. Next week, I'm bringing you the first of two episodes with Cindy Wong Brandt. So we're going to jet across to Taiwan, and we're going to hear what she has to say about especially this issue of parenting and raising kids in a home that allows them the freedom to choose their own spiritual path. And then once we get done with Cindy Wong Brandt, we're going to jet down to Down Under. We're going to go to Australia, Sydney to be precise. We're going to have 2 weeks in a row with Dr. Josie McSkimming from Australia, and she's going to talk about her book that describes the journey of people who have left fundamentalism. And again, as I mentioned last week, this is not just confined to Christian fundamentalism. This can be political fundamentalism. This can be the fundamentalism that, as you study it and look at it a little bit more objectively from the outside, is remarkably similar in Christianity, Judaism, and Islam alike. What's so interesting to me is that, of course, if you talk to most followers of any one of those three religions and you ask them, what is it that makes your religion unique? Is it the one true religion? Most Christians, for sure, and probably most Muslims and Jews would say, yes, we have the truth. This is the one true religion, the one true faith. And yet the hallmarks of all three of those religions are strikingly similar, at least in terms of the fundamentalist aspect of it. They are all what they call Abrahamic religions. They all trace their roots from Abraham, as it were, and they all argue over the same sort of spiritual lineage that descends from Abraham. But of course, in the case of Jews and Arabs alike, they both claim a physical descendancy from Abraham. So they're still fighting even to this day over who has possession of the Holy Land. So all three of these religions have remarkably similar patriarchal narratives, as well as the effects on people in terms of mental health. The toxicity of the belief system is quite unbelievable when you start to unpack it. And so this is what we're going to get into with Josie McSkimming. And then following that, I'm going to bring you the episode that my sister Valerie and I did while she was visiting me here on The Rock. We had just returned from our epic World War I battlefield tour of France and Belgium, and we got back, and before she flew back home to Seattle, we sat down and did a one-year update from our podcast that we did exactly almost a year ago to the month, really, when she was here visiting me last year. We did an episode called Surviving a Fundamentalist Upbringing. And so the good news about that is that's not coming out for a few weeks. So if you haven't heard that one, you definitely want to go back into the archives. You can find past episodes either on Podbean or on my website, preachersforum.com. You'll see all the archived episodes on both sites. So if you want to go back and catch that chat with my sister Valerie that we did a year ago, we're going to be bringing you another episode coming up in a few weeks. So look out for that. And also then, after all of that comes your way, we're going to be bringing you the live podcast episode that we did with Stacy Ray on the 16th of September in the Seattle area. In fact, when all these podcasts drop, I'm going to be in the Seattle area. So I'm going to also be looking to meet up with some ex-evangelicals, maybe do some more podcast recordings as well. So there is just a ton of great content headed your way. And in fact, speaking of great content, for those who support the show on Patreon, there's even more content. If you're a person that's looking to deconstruct, either you're walking away from the church, you're contemplating walking away from the church, or you already have done so, you're also perhaps questioning your theological beliefs. And this is something that David mentioned in last week's episode. There's two aspects to deconstruction. One is the person's relationship with the church and unpacking all of those threads and pieces. And then there's the theological deconstruction, sort of unpacking what we believe in the Bible about God, Jesus, Christianity, What about hell and all these other kind of aspects? We got to unpack all of that. We have to deconstruct that too. And so what I've done is I've started to include some bonus episodes. I did one on my journey of deconstruction that talks about how I walked away from not just the church, but Christianity as well. So kind of both of those pieces. There is also a bonus recording, sort of a pre-recording conversation. That could be a podcast in its own right with Chris Stroop. It's about half an hour long. We get into the stuff that we're going to be talking about and actually get into more detail in that show than perhaps we did in the podcast that we did the last couple of weeks. So you can look at that on Patreon, as well as the bonus conversation with David Hayward, and also my unpacking of his sort of the points that he raises in last week's episode and this one's. If you recall, I mentioned at the end of last week's chat with David in part one that he made so many good points when I was going back and editing it. I thought, I need to get all this down on paper. And then I thought, now I've got it on paper, what do I do with it? So I went through and kind of step by step walked through some of his comments and points that he raised. And I kind of go over it in a little bit more detail. So that's a helpful episode, a bonus content that's also on Patreon. So if you want to support this show, you can do so for as little as $1 a month. And you can get access to all that bonus content, which I believe will go a long way to assist in your deconstruction process wherever you find yourself along that spiritual path. So you can have all that on Patreon, as well as early access to every podcast episode before it drops on Friday. So there's a lot of great rewards. Oh, also, you get to be part of a closed Mindshift Podcast Facebook group too. So there are a lot of great rewards that are heading your way if you choose to support me on this show. So I really appreciate the people who have stepped up and supported Mindshift Podcast recently. I'm going to try and mention everybody, but of course, because I'm recording these so far in advance and doing all the pre-recording stuff, I can't mention everyone. I'm going to try, though, to get all the names of the people who supported this show out on a regular basis. So trust me, even though you don't get named right away in a podcast episode, you will when I start getting back to normal. I've been flying back and forth between Britain and America, doing work over there, visiting family. And so I've been going for 6 weeks at a time. So doing a lot of podcast recordings up front, and then they're all queued up, scheduled to drop while I'm in the States. So I don't always have time to go back and do any editing on those. But let's get on into the conversation with David Hayward, the Naked Pastor. We're going to talk about, again, more practical advice, more really relevant stuff for people who are in the process of deconstructing. And as I mentioned last week, the thing I love about David is that here's a guy who's doing it himself. He's helping many, many people who are deconstructing and who've walked away from certainly the church, if not Christianity or evangelicalism itself. Now, just before we get into the chat with David, I want to remind you of where we ended last week. David and I were talking about the pervasiveness of religion, and in particular Christianity, but he mentioned that one of the overriding hallmarks of religion is the sense of control, even down, as he says, down to the cellular level. And so control, this is what we were talking about as the episode ended last week. So let's go on into Living Life Without an Agenda Part 2. See if you can figure out what in the world that title even means. Everything had to be filtered through that lens of evangelism, mission, proselytizing, and all the rest of it. It's unbelievable when you think about it.
Yeah, it really is all-encompassing and completely thorough, the way belief enmeshes itself with our, you know, our lives. It's complete, total.
It is total. It's total. Because I used to teach my students. I mentioned I taught missional leadership. That was one of the courses that I taught. And that was basically what I told my students was, you have to be strategic. You have to be thinking about what you're doing and why you're doing it and all those kind of things. But it just leads to a lot of second guessing. You could easily doubt yourself, can't you? Because why am I doing what am I doing? Why am I, you know, I can't play this video game for an hour because now I feel guilty that I should have been doing something more constructive. I should have been praying or reading my Bible or going and talk to my neighbors or, you know, doing something missional, instead of wasting time on a video game or watching TV. It's just unbelievable.
Well, that's, as a pastor, that's what, and you too, it sounds like, that's what we taught.
Oh, yeah.
God has to have 100% control, total control over your entire life. and don't hold anything back. Don't hide anything from him. And, you know, everything is held accountable, and
it's so
God
true.
Sees everything. And, you know, it's scary.
As a pastor, that's what I thought I was supposed to be doing, because I can remember the kind of, if I boiled down to a bare minimum, basically what I was telling people from on a consistent basis, it was that classic message. You should be reading your Bible more. You should be praying more. You should be evangelizing more, your neighbors, your coworkers, your relatives, your friends. And that's pretty much what my message was, because that's what I heard all my life growing up. But of course, the ultimate irony was I was doing none of those things myself. I was feeling bad about not doing them. But, you know, I was terrible at reading my Bible. I didn't spend very much time in prayer. I had a little bit of relationships with my neighbors, but I never got them to come to church with me. So I wasn't even practicing what I was preaching to them.
Well, it's like one side of the coin is pride for accomplishing it, and the other side of the coin is guilt for not. And the coin is effort, constant, constant, laborious effort to try to measure up to the expectations that were placed upon us and that we held for ourselves.
Absolutely. And we're placing on other people too.
You know, yes.
That's the thing, especially as a pastor, you know, as you say, you can remember, I'm sure, telling that kind of thing to your congregation. You got to have total surrender and be doing everything strategically, and everything counts. Every second counts. Every day counts. Every minute counts. What are you doing to advance the kingdom? What are you doing to advance the gospel, and making people feel terrible about? I'm doing none of these things myself, of course.
And that's why when people criticize people for deconstructing or ridicule them or tell them to hurry up, or what's your problem, or what's the big deal? This should be easy. They don't understand, you know, just the enormity of influence that kind of belief has on a person's life. It really is like trying to change your race.
It's very difficult.
It feels impossible. And most of the people I know who are deconstructing, it'll always be with them. And in fact, I encourage people, don't try to reject your past. It's a part of who you are. You wouldn't be who you are today unless you were who you were yesterday. And you aren't going to be who you are tomorrow unless you are who you are today. So don't reject your roots. Somehow figure out a way to embrace them, integrate them into your life. As crazy as it was, as abusive as it felt, all those things, figure out a way to integrate this into your life. As Jung says, your dark side, your shadow side, all the bad and even the evil, figure out a way to integrate it into your life. Because I believe, like my fellow members on the Lasting Supper, for example, they're incredible people, incredibly deep. And part of that is because of the rich religious heritage that they're bringing with them.
Exactly.
And they're building new lives upon this history of theirs. And it's this whole previous part of their lives is a part of their story. It's a part of their story. You can't rip that out and just understand who they are by starting reading about their lives now. You have to understand who they are from where they've been. And so even though we're deconstructing, a lot of people are angry and have even more questions about what the hell happened and why did I do that and why did I allow that and why was I suckered in and why was I duped and all this kind of stuff. Once they figure out a way to integrate this into their lives, it just creates a deeper soil. It's like I tell people, good compost is made up of two things, shit and dirt. And some of our lives is really healthy soil and the other part shit. But when you fold it all in together, it makes for a really nutritious culture out of which we can grow our lives. So I think it's important, even though we wonder what the heck happened, like Jung and other depth psychologists say, figure out a way to integrate this and to embrace it and recognize that these are part of the roots that made you who you are today.
It's true. We can't change what happened in the past. As you say, you can't deny that. You say it didn't happen. No, it happened, But one of the things I've been discovering over the last couple of years, being part of the Exvangelical Facebook group and connecting with the Exvangelicals on Twitter, is that this is part of the backstory that we all have, is a place from which to help others as well. And it gives people like you and me and others credibility, I think, or I hope, because we know what we're talking about. We're not bullshitting people. We live this stuff, man. We were pastors. We were leaders. We were teachers. We were in ministry and in all kinds of positions of authority. And now we're going, hey, I've got a lot to say. And like you said, I've got the academic background and the critical thinking skills. I don't want to jettison all that. That's not all rubbish, as they say here in Britain. It's not all rubbish.
Right. No, it's not. I've gotten to the place where I'm very thankful for my past and for my Bible college education and my, you know, my master's, and I started a PhD. I didn't finish it, but, you know, and for my 30 years of pastoring, even though it's bewildering to me, you know, and I'm not the same guy I was then.
Absolutely not.
Somehow I am the developed guy from then. And I need to somehow learn to appreciate, you know, those chapters of my story.
Well, we're in process, aren't we? We're on this journey, wherever it's leading. This is part of the story, though. The story is still being written by a long shot. One of the things I'm learning from talking to you is this idea. I've never thought of it, as I said before, that how pervasive religion, not just Christianity, but religion is or can be. And that's and then when you deconstruct from that, you're talking about deprogramming. It's like it's coming out of a cult in a way. You don't just spend 5 minutes in a therapist chair and you go, I'm fine now. I'm healed. I'm completely normal and I can go live a great integrated life. No, it takes years and years. And like you say, you may never actually get away from all this stuff because there's things that trigger me. I haven't been in a church for over 10 years, but man, some things just catch me off guard. And I think, whoa, what was that about? Really upset and triggered by something that's just happened. And you go, okay, well, I've got more work to do, I guess. A lot more work.
Like layers of an onion.
Exactly. Well, it's things that are unprepared. You're not prepared for, because just a couple of weeks ago, I was in the States and a friend of mine brought some worship singers over to sing for my father-in-law who was passing away. And I mean, it really bothered me. And I wasn't expecting that at all. And I thought, whoa, I'm really having some strong feelings around this thing. And I'm listening to the words that they're singing and I'm going, I used to sing all those same songs. I don't believe any of what their theology is behind it now. I see what they're doing. The view of God that a lot of the worship music endorses is horrifying and abusive. And we're groveling and we're broken before him. And, you know, we're like worms and all this. And I'm just sitting in the other room going, holy shit, man. I mean, I'm really wound up. I got to get out of here, you know. So just from singing some songs.
Well, a similar thing happened to me a few weeks ago. We were watching a movie and one of my daughter's friends were over. And the movie had a very explicitly evangelical twist to it. We weren't expecting it at all. It was just on Netflix, and this had this totally religious evangelical twist to it. I was surprised, and I was embarrassed for my daughter's friend who was there. Like, I was like, it threw me back. It really threw me back. And it's the same kind of language we used to use and all that kind of thing. And I was thinking to myself, as this was all going on, I was totally analyzing myself as was happening. But I was thinking, you know, this person who's not religious at all, is probably watching this saying, what kind of bullshit is this?
Like, exactly.
This is weird kind of belief stuff. And, you know, and that, cause that's kind of the way I was responding to it. But layered on top of that was my history with it, and I experienced it as abusive, you know. So you layer that on top of it, and it makes for a very complicated, you know, life where we're constantly having to analyze our responses to things, our triggers, and figure out a way to, you know, make a healthy integration.
Well,
I totally get it.
Having that community that you can rely on is absolutely, I think it's critical. Community is huge. I'm 100% with you there, just in general for healthy living and relationships. But after that experience that I had with the worship singing, I posted a thing on the Exvangelical Facebook group and I said, this has just happened to me. What do you guys make of this? And I got tons of responses and it was a lot of sympathy and, you know, man, I'm so sorry for you. I understand where you're coming from. And I got a lot of support out of that community. And I thought, you know, this is huge for me. I need someone to talk to. And that was, I felt like at the time, this is the only place I could turn to that they're going to get it. And they totally got it, you know, unbelievable stories that came out of that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's incredible. Yeah. I value community too. That's why I started my online community and, it's been a great source of support for me and for other people. So yeah, I totally believe in a place that allows you to, you know, share where you're at, share your story and your struggles and get support for it. There's nothing like it.
I'm curious, how do you help someone to deconstruct them? Let's say that person comes to you and says, listen, David, I'm coming out of evangelicalism, coming out of fundamentalism. I've got a lot of questions. I've got a lot of doubts. I'm not sure I believe some or all of this stuff anymore. Can you help me? What do you say to that person? How do you walk them down that road? What do you do with them?
We just start talking. Usually it isn't that peaceful. Usually it's, people who deconstruct, we're very interesting people because we still believe what we believe, even though we are suspecting those beliefs are crumbling. So we're a very unique kind of person because it's almost like we're willingly putting ourselves under the knife without sedation and expecting to get parts of ourselves lopped off. It's not a pretty process. It's a scary process. For many people, it's an embarrassing one, because most of the people I talk to and who approach me and I end up guiding them through it or coaching them through it, they're losing their shit. Like, seriously, they are losing it.
It's
and
a big
they're
deal.
Crying and they're desperate. They're terrified. It very seldom is it that calm where, hey, you know, I think I'm starting to question my beliefs. Can you help me?
Yeah,
it's more
natural.
Like, you know, I don't want to become an atheist or, you know, I'm afraid of going to hell and God's going to kill me. And, you know, this kind of stuff. It's the way I do it is I just listen, let them share. And I just continue to encourage them. I don't make any assertions. I keep telling them they're okay. Let's keep going. What else are you thinking about? And over time, I don't think there's any better cure than time and a safe place. So if people have safe space and time, they're going to do it. I've always believed this. If you give people the space and the time, they can heal themselves. They can cure themselves. And that's what I've seen consistently. You give them a safe space to process, they will do it. They'll do it. So that's what I do. I provide them a safe space with me one-on-one, or if they prefer to do it in the community, I provide them with the Lasting Supper in my community there. But that's the best way, in my opinion, is just give people space and empower them, give them time, and they'll figure it out. Because for some people, it takes many months and often years to really get to a place where they feel comfortable being themselves.
And as you say, knowing they have the support of beyond just you, but that community behind you as well, that's huge too, isn't it? And I found for me, it's hugely empowering to know that we're not alone. As you say, we're people like us, they're deconstructing. We're kind of weird animals, aren't we? But there's a lot of people out there who think I'm the only one doing this. Surely, you know, is anyone else listening? Is anyone out there? And you go, no, there's thousands, millions, who knows how many, but we're in dialogue. At least that's the good thing. There's a discussion going on, and having you on this podcast and other people, that's hugely helpful, I think, for people, because they go, okay, someone else is experiencing the stuff I'm experiencing too. There's at least three of us. There's you, me, and David. So that's a start.
That's the weird thing about people who deconstruct and, you know, their relationship with the church changes. There's nowhere for them to go. And I call them spiritual refugees. They kind of are kicked out of their country, or they leave their country and they wander, and there's no place to gather. And most of them are suspicious of groups now anyway, because they've been so taken advantage of or abused by a group, and are suspicious of authority, anybody who claims to have the answers or anybody who claims to be a leader. So, you know, we are a strange animal. But when we have enough trust to gather with other people, so like your community that you have or my community that I have, we don't have an agenda. There's no order of service. There's no service. There's nothing. I'm not the leader. I facilitate. I moderate, but I'm not the guru or their leader or leading them anywhere or guiding them anywhere. Just providing a safe space for them to process. And sure enough, it happens. It takes a while, but it does happen. And in the meantime, they find out that they've got friends who are on similar pages.
So you have a physical meeting place with people. It's not just an online community, or is it both?
No, it's online.
Right. So you don't have a building. You don't have a kind of a churchy sort of thing going on.
No.
Yeah, I was going to say it almost sounded for a minute there like like you guys are getting together. And we've had a couple of ex-evangelical meetings in Seattle, and we're having another one in September, which I'm really looking forward to. We're doing a live podcast with an audience, and it's been hugely empowering. But even just meeting 5, 6, 7, 8 people and go, okay, I've been friends with you on Facebook for the last 2 years, 3 years, but now we're actually sitting down and telling our stories. And that's huge too, that to meet up with people like that, I think too, isn't it?
Yeah. And so I do meet with other, we call them TLSers, the Lasting Supper short is TLS. We call them TLSers, but I meet with other members of my community when they pass through town or other local, and there's others who have meetups here and there, but we've never had an organized gathering. No. Because we're all over the world, right? United States, Canada, the UK, Australia, South America, Holland, South Africa, you name it. We're all over the place. So
it'd be a little difficult.
But there are meetups here and there, and they're cool.
Yeah.
But I meet people here when they pass through, and I meet people when I'm in a place where they live. But no, we don't have anything organized.
Right.
Except online.
Now, I was going to ask you one last question. What's the cartoons about? Why do you, I mean, obviously I'm an artist too, so I understand that from an artistic point of view, it's a good way to kind of represent yourself. Why do you have the cartoons, and what kind of a response do you normally get from what you're posting up on Twitter and other places?
Well, I was inspired to start. I've been an artist for many years, but in 2006, I like cartoons, and I saw some cartoons. I thought, you know, I should try to draw a cartoon, and
I could do this.
I just started cartooning, and I challenged myself to do a cartoon every day until I couldn't come up with one anymore. And I thought I would last a month at the most, but here I am going, you know, how many years later? 12 years later. You know, I have a lot of, there's a lot of followers and fans and likes and stuff on Instagram. I'm everywhere. I'm on Twitter and
you're all over
Facebook
the place.
And I was Instagram say. And LinkedIn yeah. and Tumblr and Pinterest and, you know, you name it, I'm on it. But
every platform.
YouTube. Yeah. And I get a mixed, a lot of fans, they love it. And there are some people who just hate what I do. You know, they just hate the fact that I'm critiquing the church. And I tell them, listen, I love spirituality. I respect religion, and I value the church. But man, this is why I critique it so much. It's because I care about it so much. You know, these are areas, religion, spirituality, community, that can really be easily abused, and people can be taken advantage of. And if we want to do it right, let me help you see where the fault lines are. So I'm a pretty severe critic of those things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes I try just to be funny and, you know, crazy and cheesy and whatever, but most of the time I'm trying to make a point. And a lot of my cartoons now, I like to write as well. I have 7 books out, and I'm writing blog posts and things like that. And, you know, the response, especially when I write about abuse, spiritual abuse or community or, you know, deconstruction, a lot of people identify with it. And like you say, a lot of them say, oh my God, that's exactly how I feel. I didn't think anybody knew and nobody cared. But, you know, just for people to see that it's actually a real process and that your journey is valid is very empowering for a lot of people.
It is hugely empowering. It can be. And I'm glad there's people like you out there that are doing a lot of different things. You're not just a kind of a one-trick pony, are you? You've got books, you've got cartoons, you've got an online presence all over the place. So it's great to hear that you're doing all this stuff because, you know, as you say, not only is religion all pervasive to the individual person, especially in American society, in North America, it's all pervasive in society as well, isn't it? So someone said the other day, even if you weren't raised in the church, you've still been affected by religion because of the influence on politics and in public morality and public discourse. And so we've all been affected by religion on so many levels, and people may not necessarily see it until they start to go, wait a minute. Oh yeah, I see what you're talking about. This is all pervasive. Yeah. It's unbelievably powerful in certainly American Western society as well.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
A lot of work to do.
Yeah.
Well, I'm really thankful that you've taken some time out of your busy schedule. Are you still cranking out a cartoon a day?
Pretty much. Yeah. Pretty once much. In a while when an older cartoon makes my point that I want to make today, I'll pull that one up if it's a popular one. But yeah, most days I'm doing a new cartoon. So I like the challenge. I like they say, a picture's worth a thousand words.
Yes.
So for example, my cartoons where Jesus is in them or something, whether or not you believe Jesus was an actual historical person or an elaborate mythology. The point I'm trying to make is that, for example, when I show Jesus walking hand in hand with a gay person, that is upsetting to a lot of people. For some people, it's very encouraging. For others, it's like to see Jesus walking with a gay person, just, you know,
blasphemy.
There's something very powerful about that image.
Oh, yeah.
Another popular, I do more than cartoons too. So I do like images of Christ where I don't know if you've seen my refugee Jesus one where obviously a refugee, but it's Jesus.
Oh,
and, I think it's a powerful image that conveys the Christ's, solidarity with refugees. And, you know, for some people, that's a very powerful image that speaks a lot. And for others, it's very offensive.
Yeah, especially in
especially this day and age.
Exactly. I was going to say, and certainly in an American political climate with all the stuff going on with the immigrants at the border and the very full-throated evangelical support for some of those pretty barbaric policies by the Trump administration, you can poke fun at it, but it's clearly got a message. I can see obviously why people would be upset and angry and accuse you of blaspheming and everything else.
Yeah, for sure. You know, for me, the image, like my refugees one, the image speaks a lot because I do believe that if you believe in Christ, it should be understood that he is in solidarity with the poor, the refugee, and the marginalized. So to me, it speaks a lot. And I think the image is drawn in such a way that it challenges those who wouldn't believe that to rethink themselves. You know, I did another one, image of Christ, where Jesus is eating cake and it's rainbow cake. So to me, you know, that addressed that whole issue of the bakery that wouldn't bake a cake for a same-sex wedding. And so it shows Jesus eating cake and trying to share it with us. And it's obviously a gay cake. I called it Let Them Eat Cake. So it's to some people, that's a very somewhat humorous, but also maybe a prophetic image. And to others, it's like, it's shocking and offensive. And that's the kind of reactions I want to arouse in people. I don't want people just to look at an image and pass by and not have it influence them in any way. But if it empowers someone or offends someone, then it's done its job.
Well, and it's brilliant on a lot of levels too, because obviously whether or not Marie Antoinette actually said that statement, it's the classic case of someone who's in power, who's completely out of touch with the real people on the streets and what they're going through. So yeah, I get it on a historical level too, because I'm a huge fan of history. So I've studied the French Revolution, and there's a lot of lessons I think we can learn from people being overthrown who are in power. And we're seeing some of that going on now, even with this deconstructing and ex-evangelical, post-evangelical, whatever you want to call it. And that's my question is this movement, is it going somewhere? And is it going to become the next big thing that's now in charge, because that's happened many times, hasn't it, historically, where the movement that critiques the establishment in power, they end up becoming the establishment, and then they suppress the next generation. So we've got to be careful that we're not the ones who end up doing that to the next generation coming up, too.
Well, that's the way I feel about the emergent progressive movements, that they've kind of been sucked up into maybe an edgy evangelicalism, but it's no longer the prophetic movement that it used to be. But yeah, you're right. It's always in danger of getting sucked up into the powers. So
oh, yeah.
I think you're right.
Power can go to your head and fame can go to your head. And, you know, they say fame is a hideous bitch goddess because you get sucked up into that. And next thing you know, you're becoming one of the problems rather than the solution. So we got to be careful about that. Well, I was going to say before we go, what's the best way for people to get a hold of you? Because you've got obviously tons of resources out there for people who are deconstructing or just want to explore your work. What's the best platform, you would say, in terms of your social media?
NakedPastor.com. Go there and just look for Naked Pastor. I'm on my blog, first of all my contact info is there. I respond to all messages, emails. I'm on Twitter. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on Facebook. I have a fan page on Facebook as well. I'm on Google+, Tumblr, Instagram, YouTube, Pinterest. Etsy is where you can buy my art. And The Lasting Supper is my online community at thelastingsupper.com. So I'm very accessible.
You're very accessible. Sound like there are many ways, to get a hold of you. But one word of caution, don't do a Google image search on the Naked Pastor, because you might end up in some real weird stuff. You might end up in that clown church. You never know with a literal naked pastor, I don't know, wearing a clown mask. You just never know. Well, listen, David, this has been fantastic. I've just so enjoyed talking to you. I feel like we're definitely kindred spirits here, coming out of the same sort of pastoral background, academic background. So I've just totally loved talking to you. I would definitely love to come back and do this again. I've said to a lot of people that we need to come back and do a 6-8 month sort of follow up podcast. So I don't know if you're interested in maybe talking to me again at some point, but I would love to have you back on here and we can kind of review what's happened in the last 6 or 8 months and see how things have changed or whatever.
I'd love to. And we should talk about community. It's something I really highly value, and including online community. I think it's an important feature of the people who are deconstructing. I think that's where most of us are finding our tribe, right? So I'd love to talk about community sometime as well.
Okay, great. So that's on the agenda. We'll come back in 6 or 8 months. I will message you again. Well, we're going to definitely stay in touch now that we're following each other on Twitter and other different places. So I'm really glad that I've gotten to spend an hour or so with you. Thank you so much, David Hayward, for being on Mindshift Podcast with me.
Thanks so much for having me. I look forward to talking again. And when this podcast goes up, let me know and I'll share it everywhere.
Oh, yeah, I'll send you the links and I'll send you the artwork. So look for that.
Okay.
And I will talk to you again, hopefully in maybe 6 months, maybe less. Who knows?
Unless Jesus comes back.
That's
okay,
true.
Man. Good talking.
Good talking to you. Thanks, David.
Okay. See ya.
I'll tell you what, David really threw me for a loop with that last comment. What if Jesus does come back? And I think, you know, this is where it goes back to the title of these episodes this week and last week, Living Life Without an Agenda. And if you haven't figured it out by now, the reason I titled those episodes Living Life Without an Agenda was because everything that we did as Christians, at least me, and this is the case with David too, we had an agenda. Every relationship, every decision, everything had to be filtered through the lens of what is God's will? What does the Bible say? We couldn't make a decision. A lot of people even now are paralyzed. And you heard Jeff Judd talking about this a few weeks ago. His friend Bob passed on a complete full ride scholarship when he was just out of high school to art school. Why? Because his dad said, why bother going to college? Jesus is coming soon. And we heard Jeff's story about our former high school teacher standing out in a field on the evening and midnight of Y2K, waiting for Jesus to return in their robes. And of course, he never came back. He didn't return. But a lot of people live their lives that way. A lot of Christians just put things off and they don't make decisions, and their whole life is filtered through these kinds of things. Jesus is coming back soon. So why in the world would you go off to university? Why go off to college? Why do something that actually invests in that of your own life and perhaps of other people too, if Jesus is coming back? And these are the kinds of things, though, that impact people's lives. They live their entire life with an agenda. Everything has to be thought through and filtered, and some people, as I say, are just utterly paralyzed by every little decision. Believe it or not, we've all heard stories of these Christians who won't leave their driveway before they pray that they're going to get a prime parking spot at the shopping mall or the supermarket, so they won't go anywhere until they've prayed and made sure that it's God's will, and they ask God's will about every little decision that they make, and they won't do it until they know for sure. But of course, there's always the question, how do you even know what God's will is? You never seem to be able to figure that one out. And so this is the kind of stuff we're talking about, the pervasiveness of religion. It's unbelievable. And when you step out of it, when you step away from it, like I have, like David Hayward has, you start to see it for what it actually is. And you realize it is a seriously messed up system that has enslaved a lot of people, and it controls them, as David said, in literally every single aspect and area of their life. And so disentangling from that, as he mentions, is going to be a lifelong process. It's not going to be simple. It's not going to be easy. If you're that kind of person, then strap in, because you got a long journey ahead of you the rest of your life to get out of that system. And even then, you'll still find yourself, as I mentioned in my story, of being triggered by certain things. So we've got a lot of work to do, and that's why I'm here. I'm here to help bring you people like David Hayward next week, Cindy Wong Brandt for the next couple of weeks, and then after that, Josie McSkimming from Australia, that are going to help you process through thinking critically about the various aspects of deconstruction and this thing we call the spiritual journey, whatever that is, wherever you think you're going or wherever you might want to go. Maybe you don't know where you're going, but I am just a fellow traveler along this road too. So come along with me. You can follow me on Twitter at MindShift2018. You can also find David there at Naked Pastor. You can also find him on nakedpastor.com, and his other contact details are on his website. So there's a lot of ways to get a hold of David, and he's got a lot of resources to help you deconstruct, as I do, as I mentioned. For people who want to support the show on Patreon, there's a ton of extra resources available too, and that's what they're there for. They're there to help you. So I hope this conversation this week and last with David Hayward, the Naked Pastor, has been helpful for you to think through some of these issues. Join me next Friday for part one with Cindy Wong Brandt. That is going to be a great conversation for that week and the next. And then we've got 2 weeks with Dr. Josie McSkimming, followed by the podcast with my sister Valerie and me. So there's a lot of great content headed your way right here on Mindshift Podcast. I will see you next Friday. Yes,